We spoke at some length yesterday about the idea of marriage guidance and counselling, pre-marriage mostly, and David Kavanagh was on to us. Good morning to you, David.
Good morning, Ryan. How are you doing?
Nice to talk to you this morning. What was it about our chat yesterday that caught your attention?
Oh, it was a great chat. Obviously, I suppose I'm disappointed to hear that so many people have negative experiences of pre-marriage courses. I run a company called Avalon, and we run courses around the country too. And I think it's very important that people do have an opportunity to think about and talk about their expectations of the relationship after marriage, because marriage does change things for so many people, especially when children come along. And I just think that pre-marriage courses themselves need to be very professionally run, and need to have up-to-date information, so that couples can make informed decisions about the best options for them going forward. We've developed an online version, a home study version of pre-marriage courses, which allows couples who don't like the idea of sitting in a group format to talk to each other in private at home and go through exactly the same content as the hotel courses that we run. But that's a kind of a move I think people are noticing as well for themselves, that they want the space to talk in private as opposed to having somebody else or other couples listening to them as they're trying to have these in-depth conversations. So I think the way people are expecting pre-marriage courses to be run is changing, which is a good thing.
Does everyone have to go on a pre-marriage course, or is it voluntary, or how does it work? What are the rules?
Yeah, sure. So for Catholic couples getting married, and for other denominations in some cases as well, people are expected to do pre-marriage courses. Now, it does depend on the priest and what the priest decides. But for many people who are not getting married in the Catholic Church, there is a move as well. I've noticed a huge move towards people wanting to think about their relationship and to sit down together with some professional advice and to do that. So we do that as well. We offer, you know, private classes, so to speak, you know, three-hour courses where I go to people's houses and stuff. And it's a really good opportunity for people to think about how does marriage affect relationships. So that's a good thing as well. I think that's moving. People are starting to be aware that it's such a big deal getting married that they do need to prepare for it.
And do you think that a course is going to help a couple understand each other's needs
more than just life? Yeah, absolutely. Great question. I think ideally, if people had the opportunity to speak to a professional therapist for a couple of sessions, just as like an NCT kind of a check-in for the relationship, that would be great. But people don't have the time or the enthusiasm, so to speak. So in many cases, a course that's run by professionals who are qualified, I think, can offer people the space they need to just talk to each other. It's amazing how little people discuss about their futures. They get so caught up in the idea of the wedding preparations and whether or not this is going to be two singers or three singers or how many bands they're going to have on DJs or whatever at the wedding itself. But people don't even talk about the questions like, are we going to have children? If we are, how many are we going to have? Please God, if we have children, who's going to look after those children? The really basic questions people tend not to look at, they just don't come up for people. And so that's why I think a pre-marriage course where you're forced to a certain extent to reflect on these questions is quite useful.
What are the kind of the landmine issues that you might encounter every so often but have to be discussed?
I think that the one about children is a huge thing. I have worked with couples where, you know, say the guy doesn't want to have children because he's had children from a previous relationship, and the lady in question wanted children, and it was heartbreaking to process that with them, that she just said, look, you know, I really want to have children. He's like, well, I don't want to have children. And then their marriage was, their wedding was up in question as a consequence of that. I think money is a huge problem for couples these days, even wealthy people struggle to manage money effectively in some cases, and just to divide the responsibilities around money effectively and usefully can be a huge challenge. If somebody feels they're being taken for granted, that lack of fairness in the relationship will register actually in people's brains, and they will feel like there's something wrong in the relationship. So money, power, sex, I mean, there's so many different things people need to think about in terms of our preferences, in terms of our ideas, our values. A lot of stuff that comes up in pre-marriage courses that people haven't even thought about.
Does pornography come up?
Yeah, we flagged the idea of pornography and whether or not it's useful for relationships. I work as a psychotherapist myself, and I work with sex and porn addicts as a private practice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a major concern for people that the normalization of watching pornography and how that affects a couple's sexual interests, how it affects a couple's sexual experience is a huge problem. And because it's so normalized, I think it's very challenging for couples to take a step back from that and say, well, what if I catch you watching pornography and I've said to you, I don't want you watching pornography, what happens then? And these are the couples that come to me now for therapy. Their marriage is in crisis. So I think at a very important stage of the relationship's development, which is the pre-marriage course stage, that couples need to talk about these questions. They need to talk about, well, what values are we getting from pornography about sex that may or may not be useful?
Well, what is normalized pornography as a matter of interest?
I think normalized pornography is the idea that it's perfectly okay to watch multiple acts of intercourse on your smartphone, your iPad, your laptop, repeatedly for boredom, because you just have you're hypersexual, you have a huge interest in sex, and because it's the done thing, as opposed to because you're particularly aroused and you want to do that. A lot of the people, I think, that are having problems with pornography are doing it because they're bored, they're lacking motivation, they're suffering from depression. So in that stage, it becomes just like an addiction. It becomes a drug because of the dopamine hits and the serotonin hits that people get from watching pornography. It is quite addictive. Not to say that anybody who watches pornography will be addicted to it, but, you know, the essence is there. It does have a major impact on the brain. So if couples aren't aware of that impact, I think they can walk into a minefield themselves and not realize just how dangerous this stuff is.
Have you found yourself sometimes sitting before a couple who are all talk about the marriage and everything, and then you as an expert in relationships, if you like, do you ever look at them and think, you guys are completely bad for each other, or destined not to last, or you don't know each other?
Yeah, not knowing each other is a big one, I think. People can be together for 10 years, and they say, well, we don't need to do a pre-marriage course because we're together 10 years. I'll ask a couple of very basic questions about their future expectations,
yeah,
and they won't have a clue. I'll ask them a major question people can't answer is, why are you getting married?
Mm.
And many people struggle with that, and they come up with, you know, kind of circular answers that really don't tell me much about the relationship. So in that sense, I think I've observed couples who have thought about the wedding but not thought about what it will mean to be together for 40 years with nobody else in their lives ever. And that's challenging, I think, which for any couple to think about.
You must see that as well. You know, somebody saying, well, why are you getting married? Because it's the right time, it's the right age to be married, rather than the right person to be married to.
It's the most popular answer that I get on all the pre-marriage courses. It's the right time. Sure, it's the next step. What else are we
That can't
to
be
do?
The right answer necessarily all the time, is it?
Well, I don't know how useful it is, really, because if people have difficulties, as many couples do in years to come, then just because, you know, all your friends got married at that particular stage in your life probably wasn't the best reasons for you guys to get married. So I think when people step back from that and reflect on it, it's kind of, okay, so why are we getting married? Well, is it for kids? Is it because society expects us to? These are big questions.
I presume the correct answer is because I love her.
Ironically, that's the question. That's the answer I don't allow people to give me.
Why not?
Because people can say, because you can be with somebody and love them and not be married to them. So I kind of look for the more practical answers, actually. Well, there'll be, you know, benefits in terms of succession rights. Our wills will be protected. Our children will be protected.
Hey, you're sucking all the romance out of that question. I was having a moment. I had violins there and roses, and then you just threw an account book at me.
Pretty much, because see, a lot of it is hypothetical. A lot of it's, well, you know, we think we'll be happier as a consequence of getting married, but you don't know that.
Yeah.
What you do know is that legally you'll have different rights and expectations and duties and responsibilities to each other. So these are some of the practical answers and questions I try to pose to people and see, okay, are you aware of these things? Because for many people, it's just a romantic day out, really.
It's got to be more than that, though.
It should be. It needs to be. Yeah. I mean, it's bringing two families together, which is an important part as well. It's not just the couple. These two families are going to have to interact with each other for the rest of their lives, potentially. So all those kind of intricate relationships need to be managed really, really well.
Let me put an email we got to you, if I can, David. It says, I was listening to your show yesterday as I trundled to work, and I loved your section on marriage and what makes them work and how to argue more successfully. Of course, I thought about my own marriage, 15 years and still going. It also made me think of my parents' marriage and how at the ripe old ages of 80 and 83, they still managed to school me in how to make a marriage work and how to stand by your man. My dad's health has declined over the past number of years between heart disease, cancer and fading memory. Over the years, we've watched him change from an independent, intelligent man, a gifted poet and stonemason, to a frail man who needs a lot of medication and help. My mum has risen to every challenge. In the distant past, my mum was very sick too. She was one of the first people in Britain and Ireland to be diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and Dad had to work, nurse her and care for her for their children. At that stage, it would have been between 3 and 5 children. And when she got her health back, our family expanded to 7 children. So over the years, they've definitely been through the mill. We had a big barbecue a few weeks ago in my parents' home for my mum's 80th birthday. The whole family was there, and they are still very much in love, which is a nice story. Another says, going back to yesterday's friendship and mutual respect are the most important qualities in a relationship, including marriage, and no pre-marriage course can teach that. Is that a fair point? Friendship?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we've often had people sitting in our sessions where they have no interest in speaking to each other for the entire day. Like, it's not the content is the problem. They just don't want to speak to each other at all. And when somebody speaks, when one partner would speak and give an answer to what the presenter is asking, for example, the other person looks their eyes up to heaven. And we do talk about John Gottman, which is the expert that was mentioned yesterday as well, and we reflect on those things because respect and companionship and friendship, those three things, I think, are the most important aspects of any successful marriage. Yes, it's great to have passion. Yes, it's great to have mutual interests. But if you don't have respect, all the other stuff kind of falls apart. So I think, I mean, that story you just read out there, beautiful story. I mean, I think that's the ultimate kind of form of love and sacrifice and commitment to somebody over years and years and years of struggle. Yeah. I think that's wonderful. I do think we probably underestimate maybe some of the struggles that marriage can give us because you are committing to be with one person for the rest of your life. I think the internet generation, of which we're now becoming a part of, gives us the idea that we are supposed to be happy all the time, even though there might be difficulties in the relationship. So we look outside the relationship very quickly, I think, which is a challenge as well.
Texas, our marriage preparation course in Shankill in Dublin was great. Some daft bits, but also some lovely moments and good questions to ponder. Aidan says, I had a great experience at the pre-marriage course. I wish we discussed more, though. 7 years of marriage and kids, we're now separated as I kept my gambling addiction to sports betting a secret. But now I counsel addicted gamblers from the ages of 12 to 60, which is, I suppose, some good out of a difficult story. What about secrets?
Secrets?
Yeah. I mean,
depends on the level of secrecy, I think. I think it depends on the nature of the secret as well. You know, do you smoke behind your partner's back and you run out back at night time to have a cigarette? Is that going to destroy the relationship? Perhaps if the person in question that you're smoking, you know, if your partner really detests smoking, that's going to be a major issue.
Mm.
If you're an addict and you are hiding your addiction from your partner, if it comes out, that's probably going to blow things out of the water completely. Other secrets, I think we have to be discreet. I think we have to be aware that, you know, people can fall in love with total strangers that they've met along their journey, and they can fall out of love and never do anything, never act on that fact. And their marriage can be intact because they've never acted on it, but they've recognized, I've fallen in love with a colleague from work, for example. I'm not going to act on it. It is what it is, and I'm going to move past it. So should I tell my wife or my husband if this has happened? I don't know. Sometimes that would do more damage than good. So, when people come to me with those kind of questions, it's very much an individualistic answer is being explored because, I don't know, every couple is so different and their values around things like honesty are also so different. It's very hard to tell.
It must be also very hard to guide an intellect or an emotion.
Yeah.
We're talking about love and to an extent romance and as well as the practicalities. And your job as a relationship consultant is, you know, it's a hard one. You can't just say, well, just if you take two Panadol and go to bed, you'll be grand in the morning, you know?
No, exactly. But I wrote a book actually in February there called Love Reward, Using Your Brain to Mend Your Heart. And we talk about heartbreak, for example, in the book and about how heartbreak can be cured by Panadol, ironically.
Just to be a rush to the chemist now when you say that.
Well, that's just it. Researchers have found that when people are given Panadol or basic painkiller, the part of the brain that registers rejection is the same part of the brain that registers like psychological pain or physical pain. And you can cure heartbreak in a very, very simple way. It takes time, but you can do that. You don't need antidepressants. You just need basic Panadol or paracetamol to a certain extent. So, you know, in the pre-marriage course, if people are hearing information that's quite scientific and quite up-to-date, like neuroscientific stuff, as we do, I think they can learn a lot about how to manage emotions more effectively, how not to let themselves run away with themselves in the course of a lifetime. You're committing yourself to somebody for 40, 50 years is a huge commitment, and it's impossible to tell what that's going to be like when you're caught up in a wedding day preparation. So those kind of ideas, I think, are very important for couples to just, okay, take a step back. What do we really want in 30 years' time? How will we raise our children? What values do we want to give our family? Those questions, I think, are important too.
All right. A couple of quick texts before we wrap up here. Because my ex had previously had a marriage annulled, the Catholic Church required us to attend a psychologist. I didn't quite understand why I had to do this as I had not been previously married. We had an alternative ceremony. If the church had informed me, I would likely benefit from their procedures. I would have been better prepared for the dark times that followed. There were many secrets. Another says the reason why after over 14 years and two children we would consider marriage is because of succession rights and tax. Not romantic, but practical, which is...
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does. David, I've enjoyed talking to you this morning. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Ryan.
Nice to talk to you. David Kavanagh there, who runs Avalon Relationship Consultants.